In time, the term became affixed to the Donnelly name. That shouldn't be surprising. After all, those who killed the family, and those who supported them both before and after the deed, far outnumbered the Donnellys who survived. And so it was their version of the tale that would be told and retold for the better part of a century after the killings. It was their version of events that predominated in the press, and in the first books written about the tragedy. One need only see the title of Thomas P. Kelly's The Black Donnellys for proof of this. That the Donnellys were not a family of saints is clear. But what part in Biddulph Township was? The problem, it seems, is that the Donnellys never sought the protection of a group. Their number, and thus their strength, was firmly fixed to the number of their family members. This number had been sufficient to protect them when the boys of the family had grown into young men, but with the deaths of Jim and Mike, the imprisonment of Bob, and the fact that Pat was living over 100 miles away in the Niagara region, the remaining three brothers and their old father were no longer powerful enough to defend themselves. In short, this family of outsiders was vulnerable, which gave their adversaries the opening to put the Donnelly problem to bed once and for all. It is important to note the people who murdered the Donnellys were not a fraternity of homicidal maniacs, but rather regular hard-working farmers who slowly began to scapegoat a single family for all their community's problems, conflicts and tribulations. For this to happen, several things needed to fall into place. The Donnellys' transgressions needed to be highlighted so as to define them, and other farmers' problems and misdeeds needed to be foisted on the Donnellys, rather than their accusers' own shortcomings. And finally, the one source of solace and spiritual guidance in a small community, the Catholic priest at St. Patrick's Church, needed to paint the Donnellys as being every bit as evil as their enemies believed. The amazing thing is that all of these things happened. It was a perfect storm. If any one of the aforementioned elements had been missing, the murders may never have occurred. As it happened, the family's enemies had grown to fear a bogeyman of their own creation, and then sought security within a herd of like-minded individuals. They had allowed their resentment and fear of the Donnellys to distort their judgment so much that, in an attempt to justify the butchery, the Donnellys were painted as an evil family that simply received its comeuppance at the hands of an exasperated township. That they were murdered was unfortunate, yes, it was said, but those who killed them simply had no choice. The position of the community was that they were driven to commit the deed in an effort to save their farms, their town and their lives from a rabid family that was hell-bent on destroying all of this. Even the matriarch of the family had to be scented out as being extraordinarily evil. This was necessary as the killing of women and children was particularly frowned upon from an ethical perspective, and so the rumour was spread that the mother of the family was deranged and insisted that each of her children had to kill a man. This, with few exceptions, has been the tale that has been passed down to Canadians over the generations. As one now knows, it has turned out to be a myth, and consequently the township, and those in proximity to it, later thought it best not to talk of the matter at all. All of Lucan, London and Middlesex County became silent, and even the offspring of the Vigilance Committee members could recall no mention ever being made within their respective homes of the Donnellys, nor of their relatives' role in what was once the biggest news story in the Dominion. It was thought the matter might go away if it was never mentioned. And yet, 141 years later, the tale endures. By contrast, outside of Middlesex County, the version of the story put forth by the Vigilance Committee never passed muster. And in those areas of the country that didn't depend upon the freedom of 20 to 40 men for its success in commerce, tithing and survival, the killers received no such support or loyalty. Indeed, the bulk of Canada's sympathy landed on the side of the murdered family. Even a cursory inspection of the facts makes it clear that in the background of the drama, pulling the strings were wealthy business and political interests that wanted the Donnellys gone by any means necessary. And then, as now, all the villagers followed the golden rule of power, i.e. those who had the gold made the rules. The Stanley brothers of Lucan certainly had the most gold, and opposed any person or family that didn't fall in line with their wishes. And when a Catholic